to study your oncology. It is very difficult after this clinical description to say something. I'm not trying to give answers. I'm trying to give some thoughts. I'm trying to present some sources. It's not a response in the sense that I have the answers, but I hope there will be an interaction. I presented sources, and I hope you have the handouts. I would like first to answer etymology. Dr. Greenberg spoke about truth and trust. I would like to start with an explanation on the Hebrew expression for truth, which means emet. Emet is comprised of three letters in the alphabet, the very beginning, the last one, and in the middle. Because truth has to be composed, has to be balanced from the very beginning to the very end. And if you start counting here, you will actually realize that if you count from Aleph to Tav, in the very middle is not the Mem. The only change, in order to understand it properly, that you have to count the final letters as well. And you have a double Mem, a double Nun, a final version, and Pei and Sadi, a double one. Once you do that and you go to the final versions, you will see it's exactly in the middle. The message is that if you want to go to the truth, you have to be the beginning and the end, to know every detail to the very end, and afterwards to find the middle one, and it turns to be emet in the middle, like here. Another interesting fact is that emet has two legs here, the aleph and the mem and the tav. The other letters don't have it. The emet is standing very solid, these letters. And if you go to lie at the very end, you see that it is comprised of the three, of the fourth and third and second letter from the end, and that is shekel. The emet is something very comprehensive. It needs all the components, or in a clinical perspective, we would probably say that we have to be in a multidisciplinary approach. Everybody has to bring his input, his approach, clinically, philosophically, religiously, psychologically. It is self-evident that truth has an importance and a superior value. And I don't have to bring proofs for that. It would be ridiculous. Even though I would like to bring the first source where it says in the Talmud that Chotamo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu emet. The signet of God is truth. God, that's his honor that the truth had to be said. So it has a very, very high level of value, and actually by truth telling we are imitating God. There's an interesting concept if we talk about truth, to apply it, not on a theoretical religious level. I'm talking about a practical level, about a judge. And the job of the judge is that he has to render a judgment. And it says in the Talmud in Masechet Shabbat, Kol dayan shedan din emet la'amito afilu sha'a achat, a judge, any judge who renders a true judgment to its truth, even for 1 hour, is considered by Scripture as if he became a partner with God in the act of creation. And that's a very interesting notion, that he is not judging emet, truth. He renders a true judgment to its truth. There is a subjective component of the truth of every case. There is no general policy about it. There are very important general guidelines, but when it comes to case by case, it is a truth of this situation, emet l'amito. So we have to find, we are not only focusing on general policies, which are important, but we are looking for the context of truth on a case by case basis. I'm trying now to give an overview with a bird's eye overview, and therefore this little bird here, on the Jewish sources. And I'm not trying to cover all the sources we have. I will be happy to refer to the encyclopedia of Dr. Steinberg, Hilchotit Refuit, which will be translated very soon into English. And there you'll find a lot of sources. I have two new sources. Dr. Steinberg will be happy to have your comments on that. And I'm trying to give you an overview. This bird will fly from the Bible to the Mishnah, Talmud, and modern medicine. And I'm trying to be short in 30 minutes, even less than that, Jewish 30 minutes. The sources we have, I will focus on biblical sources, from the Talmud, there is a huge amount of literature on modern sources, and I will not focus on that because I would like to show you what is the basis, and the way we bring it together might be very, very different for each situation. If it is a child, a different background of the family, of the age of the patients, but I would like to show you the stones which we can build this decision. The importance will be to come to the end, to the relevance. What do we learn clinically from these sources? And that is not only important for medical ethics, Jewish medical ethics. I think for everything in life we do, we have at the end to find the question, what's the relevance? So that should just be hopefully an example for that. One example from the Bible is in Sefer Breshit, when Sarah was told they had no children, and when God told them that she will have a child, she was very surprised. ותצחק שרה בקרבה לאמור, אחרי ולותי הייתה לי עדנה. ואדוני זקן, she laughed and said, after I'm old and my husband is old. So she actually blamed him. She didn't realize that she is also not an 18 years old girl. He is old. When God afterwards told Abraham, he told Abraham, ויאמר השם אל אברהם, למה זה צחקה שרה לאמור, האף אמנם מלד ואני זקנתי. God told Abraham, I spoke to Sarah just before. Why did Sarah laugh and say, shall I indeed bear a child now that I am old? So according to the description of God, Sarah didn't blame Abraham. She said, I am old, how can I have a child? Is that not truth? God changed the wording of Sarah by telling Abraham, she thinks she's old, not you are old, she's a problem. Is that withholding truth? Is that a modification? I think it is the language of truth, that you can modify it. You are not changing the truth, you are just presenting it in a way, not with a hammer, as you see here. Please pay attention to the clip art. And I realized last week when we were sitting off the family, a child who died, unfortunately, after many, many years of treatment, the father told me it made a major difference to him if the physician told him the prognosis is bad, poor, or if the physician told him the prognosis is guarded. So just an expression like that, he got the message very clearly, and he understood what it means. But you can present it to him in another way without talking with a hammer. And he communicated the same message. The Talmud actually makes the conclusion, yes, there are situations, mutar leshanot mipnei darkei shalom. I won't discuss all the sources, but I think you have them in the handouts. They will be hopefully very soon on a website. And it is important to learn from the sources to see the richness of the sources we have in the Talmud and later on, in order to make up our mind how to approach and how should we think. I won't go in all the details. The Talmud says in Yevamot, yes, sometimes it is allowed, it is permitted for a person to deviate from the truth in a matter that threatens the peace. If there is really a situation, leshanot bedvar shalom, that it really threatens him, it is allowed to change it. The next opinion points out, no, it's not only allowed, it is even a mitzvah. And there's another context, in both contexts, telling the truth would have led to a life-threatening condition. And I think that's an important point. It's not just changing it because you want to be Canadian, very polite, and you have a tie and you're well organized the way you talk. It is a question, does it threaten his life or not? And these situations speak about life-threatening situations. That was their perception. And later on it says, how great is the peace, for even God altered the truth for the sake of peace, for initially it's written, my husband is old. And later it is written, so I am old. So you see it's not only a nice story in Sefer Breshit, it's a conclusion, the halacha. The language of truth-telling is so meaningful, and as Dr. Greenberg mentioned, not only what you say, but also how you say. You shouldn't kill by telling the truth. In Mishlei, Proverbs, Shlomo HaMelech says, "Chanoch la'nar al pi darko, gam ki yazkin lo yasur mimena." You should educate the child in his own way. Every child has his own way. And you have to find his own way. Even when he gets old, he will not depart from it. And we are not talking about only about medicine, pediatrics. I think also as educators, as parents, there is a long-term effect. Dr. Greenberg runs a clinic, the long-term effect after chemotherapy treatment, chemotherapy and cancer survivors. And I think there is a long-term effect. How you talk to them at the age of 5 and 8, that will change their mind at the age of 30, of 40, when they are parents, grandparents. It will change their life. Even a little child understands it very, very well. Or in the words of Dr. Greenberg, follow the child, always follow the child. The truth they can tolerate will be made obvious to you, sometimes many years later. But there is a concept of l'amna'ar al-pi darko. You have to understand him in his own way. He has a way. Just find a way. There is a way. And don't think that since he is very young and childish and not competent, he doesn't understand. If he sees a line and he comes to the hospital and there is chemotherapy, he has certainly a way. He understands what's going on. That's the source, and you have it translated in two different slides into English. I couldn't put it together, which I'm happy to present to you today. I haven't found it in other sources. I would like to take you to a story in the Bible, Bereshit. Yaakov was facing meeting his brother Esav after many, many years of a very difficult relationship between them. And it was a life-threatening situation, not medically, but personally. It was really a threat of war. And Yaakov was concerned, and he divided his camp into two parts. And he said, when Esav will come in one camp, the second camp will survive. So he made preparations how to survive this threatening, very risky situation. And he said, "Hamachane hanishar lefleita," the remaining camp, shall be a refuge. Little Yosef, at that time, probably 6 years old, and we see six-year-old children, and they understand a lot. Little Yosef, when Yaakov introduced his family to Esav, he brought all the family and all his, he had four wives, he brought four women, he brought all of them, and at the very end, it was Rachel and Yosef who came at the end. But it doesn't say Rachel and Yosef, it says Yosef and Rachel. This little boy, Yosef, he wanted to protect his mother. He understood what's going on. It's a bad guy, the Esav. And this little guy protected his mother because he understood what's going on. It's dangerous. Let's go first. Let's protect my mother. Many, many years later, Yosef was in Egypt, and he hasn't seen his family for many, many years. And they came to him. He told him, "I'm Yosef, but not you sold me to Egypt." He was meanwhile the viceroy in Egypt. "Not you sold me. It is God who sent me here. Vayeshlocheni Elohim lifnechem lasum lachem she'erit ba'aretz ulachayot lachem lifleita gdola." I survived here. My life, the purpose of my life as an adult, as a very successful, after a wonderful career in Egypt, is that I should bring survival and to remain for the Jewish people. So he could translate this terrible experience of a six-year-old to shape his life. That was the motto of his life, to be a survivor, to help his family. It's exactly the same expression used here by his father Yaakov that he uses 30 years later on, Beno Yaakov on Bereshit. If we compare that, and that's a model to compare, there was another sister of Yaakov, Dinah, another daughter, Dinah. And it says that Yaakov introduced all his sons. He did not introduce his daughter to Esav. Why not? The Midrash says, that's not the Pshat, the Midrash says, "Heicham hayta?" Where was she? "Netana beteiva v'na'al b'faneah." He put her in a box, in a trunk. She should be protected, totally protected. As Dr. Greenberg presented, the mother sleeps with her day and all the time she's with her. She should not be exposed to that situation of truth, what happens. And what happened to her? After this meeting with Esav, she drifted from the family. She was probably not part of the reality anymore, and she wasn't part of that. She was protected because Yaakov thought she's very vulnerable, and at the end, she was actually more vulnerable and sensitive to drift from the family, and she went a totally other way, as is mentioned there. So here we see a very interesting model that by telling the truth, and I could go to the English text, by telling the truth, facing the truth, which is very, very hard, but it can be integrated in their life. And I met families and asked them, what was the worst part in the whole treatment? And they told him, the child asked, will I die? And the father had to tell them the answer, whatever it is. That was the worst part. So facing the truth is not that easy, but it might be integrated in the life. Denial the truth may, at least in that context, have an extremely poor outcome, as we see in Sefer Breshit. I would like to show you another two sources, which are very similar, and they're a little bit complicated, but they're fascinating, because they actually focus right away, they target exactly our problem, in a beautiful way. And it says in Sefer Melachim, the king, that there was a king from Aram, and he was very, very sick. He sent to Elisha, one of the prophets, and told him he was very sick. And he told him, Elisha, tell me the truth. Will I survive? Will I recover from this disease? And here, please pay attention to the writing, to the red and yellow writing. Vayomer alav Elisha, lech emor lo chayot tichye. Ve'iran yashem kimot tamut. Please go and say, you will certainly not recover. I'm reading first red. That's the text it's written. Tell him, no, you are going to die. That's the text it is written in the Bible. But in the and that is written with a lamet aleph, meaning, tell, you will certainly not recover. But there is an interesting change at the margins of the text. Read the lamet aleph. Instead of no, read it as lo lamet vav, to him. You know, it says lo tignov, you should not steal. And some people read it as well, you should steal to him. So that is, you have to be very careful about the writing. It says sometimes very clearly lamet aleph, it means no. Lamet vav, it means to him. And of course it changes totally the context of the whole message. According to the written text, you should tell, he asked, will I die? Will I survive? Tell him no. According to the oral text, it says, Shalom Aleichem. According to the oral text, it says, will I survive? Yeah, tell him, you will live. You will survive. And that is this difference. A wonderful commentator, biblical commentator, Ralbak, in the 14th century says, don't tell him that frankly. Say him yes and no. There is sometimes a way to say yes and no. Probably we might say that if you have to give it to him black and white, and he tells you, I want to know it. I have my lawyer with me. Give it to me, black on white. You have to tell him what's written. Lamed Aleph, you will not survive. But if you talk to him, and you have to present it to him in a way that he will that see what he understands, and he will get to the truth later on. And that is a very interesting source, that both texts are actually the truth. Compared to that, in Yeshayahu Lamed Chet, it says that another king, Chizkiyahu, was very sick. And Yeshayahu, another prophet, came to him. Tzav leveitcha, ki met ata, velo tichye. You should get your affairs in order, because you are going to die. That's the way Yeshayahu spoke to Melech Chizkiyahu. He told him right away. Told him, you will die. And you should get your house, your affairs ready in order, because you're going to die. And Yeshayahu, Chizkiyahu, he heard what he was told, and he was crying, he was praying, tshuva, and he changed his outcome by praying to Hashem very much. So we see here there is a contradiction about this source, truth telling very, very directly, without any modification, any yes and no, and no and yes, right straight to the point. And the previous source, Sorry, here it is right frankly, and here the Privosaurus says yes and no. What's the answer for this contradiction? I scanned you here, Professor Steinberg, you recognize it? It's a little footnote, these beautiful footnotes in the text by in Professor Steinberg's encyclopedia, that might be exactly the answer. It's not a contradiction in the text. It is life which brings you certain sources which might be a contradiction. In the previous source, probably the king wouldn't have done anything with that information. Therefore, you told him yes and no, let's see what he wants to know, and you go from there. But for this situation of Yeshayahu, there was a clear conclusion. You should get your affairs in order, and he did it, and he changed it. It was a very, very important practical conclusion, and that's the text from Dr. Steinberg's encyclopedia explaining that it has to be explained always in a very individual approach. So far, the biblical sources, we come to the Talmudical source. And we are talking about the age group, or not, we are talking about a group, what do we say in a situation? And we are talking about hundreds of situations. Rav Kook explains beautifully the Gemara in Masechet Brachot. It says there, when you see a crowd, if one sees a large crowd of people, he should say a blessing. Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Chacham Harazim, blessed are you, the sage of the secrets. So you should say, if you see hundreds, thousands of people together, wow, what quantity of people? What do you say? That God is the sage of secrets. Why? The Talmud explains, Shein datam domeh ze laze, ve'ein parzufehem domim ze laze. Because their minds are not similar to each other, and their faces are not similar to each other. The same way their faces differ very much, their mind differs very much. Rav Kook explains, and I think the text says it, that if you see lots of people, you say, wow, they're all the same, they're all together, all the same place, the same time. We have a huge amount of people. The Gemara says, no, please keep in mind that each of them has his own secret, his own personality, his own background, and beware of generalizations. Keep in mind that every person is his own individual, and therefore the bracha points out Chacham Harazim. Don't look at hundreds at a time, look at one of them, and you will see that there's a whole story in one single person. And here we have some sources from the Talmud which are dealing with truth telling, and all of them in a very, very extreme situation. Dr. Greenberg presented extreme situations. I'm trying to find extreme situations as well. There is a Gemara in Masechet Moed Katan, Daf Kavvav, stating that if there is a very sick person and one of his relatives died, so it is normally a mitzvah of Avelut, that you have to tell him. There is a mitzvah of Kriya, of Avelut, of Shiva, of Shloishim, and you should tell him. And it is a mitzvah, even according to one of the opinions, Midoraita, we have it in the reading of the Torah yesterday, the Kohen. So you should tell this person. Now we have on the bedside, we are seeing a very, very sick person, and he's very sick, and he probably can't face, he can't deal, he can't cope with that. The Gemara says, Chole shemet lomet, ein modi'im moto shema titaref dato. Shema titaref dato alav. Ve'in mekarim befanav, u'meshatkim et anashim befanav. If there is a sick person, an ill person whose relative died, we do not inform him that the relative died, lest his mind become muddled. And we do not do anything which could be part of Simanei Avelut. And why not? We have a mitzvah of Avelut. We have to tell him. It's his mitzvah to mourn about his relative. We don't tell him. The Shulchan Aruch, actually, Kvar Masechet Smachot says, Ve'in bochim ve'in maspidim befanav, shelo yeshaber libo. We don't want, in order not to depress him. And it means actually we shouldn't break his heart. That's the Hebrew expression. And therefore we shouldn't break his heart. It's not, in English probably it's better to say not to depress him. So we have a situation here where we would have a mitzvah to tell him in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Avelut. No, this person has to be protected. He can't deal with that. And there would be a teruf hadat. He would go crazy. He would get even more sick, and he would probably die or be depressed by not being capable to deal with that. There is a situation of too much truth, and we have certainly the mitzvah of protecting from the truth and even to cancel a mitzvat avilut in order to protect him. Now it starts to be complicated. We start about mishpachologia, family relations. There was a Rav, a Talmid Chacham, and he had an uncle, and his uncle was married. His father was married twice, and he had a brother and a sister from two different parents, and they married together, and they are Ema and Ava. That's that easy. It's not really easier if you see that Rav had mother, father, Ema, the Aivo. Rav came to visit Rav Chia. He came to Eretz Yisrael, and Rav Chia, Talmid Chacham there, asked him, "How is my sister, your mother?" And he told him, "You ask me about your mother? About my mother? About your sister? Why don't you ask me about your father first?" Okay, that's an answer. He understood the answer. "How is your father? You ask me about Aibu? Why don't you ask me about my mother?" What's that? What is that? This kind of language? It's a language which he understood very well. Rav Chia decided, "I realized both of them have died," and he started at Hilchot Avilut, Shmuah Rechoka, Yom Echad. He understood the message. So it was an interesting discussion. He didn't want to tell him they are dead. He told him, "You will understand. Ask me about the father." He asked about the father. "Why don't you ask about the mother?" A very, very sensitive language. And actually what is built in this beautiful text, I think really remarkable, that it's not a truth that you have to say or you don't have to say. Say a drop, go one step, and see the response. And he responded. "Why don't you ask about the father?" He asked about the father, and he got the message. Don't tell them the whole truth. To start telling them the whole truth, could be we should talk about it tomorrow. And we are telling you generally what is your diagnosis. Tomorrow we will go and we'll discuss the next step. The truth, you don't have to bring it once. I think everything has to be told to him if he wants. But give it to him stepwise and see what's his language. He understands it very, very, very well. If we start chemotherapy, he knows that it is cancer. It's not for an ear infection. Even a child, I'm convinced at the age of 5 years, he understands very well. He can't tell you what is the protocol, but he knows very well something is wrong. Therefore, I think this example is probably a beautiful one to say, listen and follow the patient, develop a language of truth-telling. The truth he can tolerate will be made obvious to you. That's not from the Talmud, that is from Dr. Greenberg. Now we should find the last source is a little bit a more happy one. We should talk about chasanas, weddings, and here we have an interesting machloket about between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. The question is, how should we dance when we come to a wedding? Kitzad merakdim lifnei akala is the song. Beit Shammai omrim kala kemot shehi. If she is, let's say, she's a very nice, charming, beautiful kala, no problem. But let's say she's a very ugly person, and you have to stand there and you have to start dancing. How can you say, "Oh, what a wonderful, beautiful, charming kala," and she is very ugly? So Beit Shammai, straight to the point. Question of truth-telling. Kala, you are like you are. Take a mirror, and here's the answer. Baruch Hashem, we have Beit Hillel. I was happy never to be invited at the Chatuna of Beit Shammai, and I hope in the future it will not happen. And Beit Hillel says, no, we say in every situation, Kala na'a b'chasuda. It's a charming, beautiful, bright, Mazel Tov, b'sha'a tova. Beit Shammai is extremely upset. Truth-telling, she is ugly. How can you say that? It says clearly in the Bible, Midvar sheker tichak. You shouldn't lie. How can you lie? So Beit Hillel, attacked very hard by Beit Shammai, he says, I have an answer to you. If somebody, according to your view, if somebody made a bad purchase in the market, should one praise him in the purchaser's eyes? Or denigrate it in the purchaser's eyes? Of course, you would say that one should praise it in his eyes. Why? Because if he bought it, if he likes this purchase, for him, that is beautiful and charming. Nobody forced him. That's his choice. And he loves her, and there are probably lots of other things he loves about her, not exactly her nose, that you don't like. So it doesn't mean that truth is something that you can assess it by 100 people and take average, and therefore she is 85% beautiful, 88% charming, or the other way around. It's not, that is the understanding of Beit Shammai, and there are actually two approaches. Rav Zevin has a wonderful Sofnat Panech, a wonderful understanding to understand Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, that she's not Beit Shammai. It's not only this machlok, it's a whole world, it's a whole philosophy. But Baruch Hashem, we have a psak according to Beit Hillel. We should really be happy about that. Applying that for medical truth-telling, there is a subjective truth. Beit Hillel says, yes, you think she's ugly, and most of people, 85%, think she's ugly, but the Chatan, he thinks she's beautiful. She's his life. Therefore, kalana aba hasuda. Respect it, and it is not a violation of midvar sheker tichak, because the truth is that his truth is the truth. Dr. Greenberg had a slide to summarize, and I would like to show my slide as well. I would like to summarize, we saw Jewish sources, and as I mentioned, with the eyes of a bird, with a bird's eye. We had biblical sources, we had Talmudic sources, and we have a lot of poskim. For instance, one in the 68 from Australia, Rav Bezalel Stern, Bezel Chochma, a beautiful tshuva. He was asked in the 60s, there's a father who is very sick, and the son asked the Rav, should I tell him that he's very sick? In the 60s, he had a cancer. In the 60s, there was probably nothing to offer or very little to offer. And the approach, Rav Stern, he was from Eastern Europe, survivor of the Holocaust. He told him it is kibbut av va'em not to tell him. Honor father and mother, you should not blame him, because there's no point to tell him that. I think today we have, I know today we have other approaches which bring that in another concept, and the poskim, they have a lot of approaches bringing that into consideration. My summary would be as follows, that the truth for sure is highly important, superior value is the signet of God. It has to be a comprehensive and a very detailed approach. You have to understand very, very well the whole picture and all the details, including the final letters of the truth. I don't think that there is an absolute rule. There is no general policy, but there is a context of the truth in a case by case. Years ago, when I heard about this approach, case by case, there is no ruling, I was actually very frustrated. Because the way I like it, there is a halacha, shulchan aruch, there is a mishnah berurah, psak, tak, it's very clear. Or to talk in the language of chemotherapy, we have a protocol, you shouldn't change the protocol, we go exactly day 1, day 8, day 15, no chochmas. And I think today, I don't see it as a frustration that we don't have this clear approach. I see it as a special value. There is a emet la'amito. You have to go, and that's the beauty, and that's life, that you have to determine the ideal amount of truth for each individual, the way he can understand it. I think that I agree to follow the child, lanar al pi darko. There is a very important issue of truth, the language of telling the truth, to avoid isolation, not killing by truth, from the case of Yaakov, Dinah, and Esav. To put all these pieces together is emet, is our emet, and there is autonomy of the patient, but there is autonomy of the physician, of the father, of the mother, of everybody, and this autonomy altogether has to bring all these pieces together. I don't think there is a contradiction in the Talmudical sources, I think there is a situation in life that you have different approaches, and that is the Chochmah, to bring it all together. As a reference, I would like to leave this slide, and I'm thanking Rav Kelman and all the other people he mentioned here. I will be happy to have that as a part of the curriculum in Jewish medical ethics very soon on a website, and we'll be happy to hear your comments on this email. Dr. Greenberg will respond to my presentation. Please. Dr. Greenberg.
As always, Benny humbles me. One of the beauties of having Benny work with me is it's sort of like when your children grow up, learning from your children is a special privilege. Learning from your trainees perhaps is the same, and it has been a privilege. There are innumerable contexts in which what we've said has dovetailed immediately, and I wanted to just comment on the issue of the language of telling the truth. And Benny has hit, if you will forgive me the expression, the nail on the head. Because ultimately language is how you cloak the truth. The covering of the nakedness of the truth and the providing of a hook to hang hope on, notwithstanding the truth of the truth. Bluntness and truth-telling are not synonymous, nor even complementary, nor are gentleness and sensitivity or cocooning the truth equivalent to lying. You do not have to deliver the truth with a hammer when you can do it with a feather. And I think that is the message that comes out of both the halachic sources and the clinical reality. Can I comment on this slide, Benny? The long-term effect. I think the lesson here is as much about trustfulness of the world as it is about the specific facts in question. People survive, parents survive, there is a life beyond whatever are the immediacies of today's events and today's catastrophe. And I think what Benny is highlighting here is that in the long term, how you trust the world depends on the degree to which you were confronted with the reality of the truth, not just the quantity, but the quality. We go here to Rav Kook. And Benny has already perhaps made this point. It becomes a very important point in the reality of the practice of my discipline in particular, but of medicine in general, and how it relates to people. Because we do put people on protocols. We say the common way, the correct way to treat patients is to give X drug on Y day. And then we step back and say, yeah, but what happens if the patient has a different capacity to metabolize drug A, or is genetically predisposed to complication Y, and so we modify the protocol to adjust to the person. I believe that's what truth-telling is about too. There are behavioral, psychodynamic, personal experiences that modify the protocol and have to modify the protocol. The truth is always the truth. How it is told, I think, is perhaps more important than, or as important, than that it is told. Because facing the truth, I would suggest, is a process, and the role of us as healthcare providers is to facilitate the process of facing the truth, to interpret the truth, and to help to deal with the truth. It is not to create a false truth or to force facing the truth. And I think that's what our interface, I think, has been about. Yes, there's an absolute truth. That truth will play itself out. How you cope with that truth and how you frame that truth will determine how the truth is coped with, both by the person who must do the coping and those who surround them. And I think that's enormously reassuring to me, to know that there is a background of wisdom of the eons that is a support for what it is we do every day in the context, no matter how big or small the issue. I happen to focus on catastrophic issues because my field is catastrophic. But there's a truth every day for which I think the principles apply. Thank you for helping me, Benny.
We can take a few minutes of questions, then we'll have lunch. So I don't know if I have to moderate, but okay. Dr. Warren Goldstein and Dr. Bookman next. Just
the talks are wonderful. I think your talk and Rabbi Steinberg's talk are really very interrelated. And here's a question. The flip side of it, of truth telling, is of course the power of hope, which Dr. Greenberg talks about, keeping that kernel of hope. My question is, Is there a halakhic guidance as to when we can take away that kernel of hope, or when we can switch from saying, yes, you may improve, you may survive, to saying, okay, we're now recognizing that you are a dying patient? How, understand the question? When, it's such a tricky thing clinically. The question is there any halakhic guidance?
First of all, I would like to welcome Eddie Reichman. When you were here last time, I learned from you a very good joke. If you're in the audience, if you're talking about the theory of relativity and Einstein is in the room, you should better not talk. And I would like to ask Dr. Steinberg to answer this question, because I have really difficulty about that. It's your joke.
Thank you for changing my name. I think the answer is never, although never say never, but the answer is never. There's a famous statement in the Talmud, "Afilu cherev chadah munachat al tzavaro, al yitayesh min harachamim," which means even if a sharp sword is against your neck, never give up on passion and hope that something may change. And I think not only is it philosophically true, I think it is even medically true. Because when we tell a patient, you are definitely dying and nothing can help you anymore, I'm not sure that's the truth either. Because we know we know instances of people that the physician said, you are going to die within 2 weeks, and this patient survived the physician. So that be careful how you state things. It doesn't mean that you're not allowed ever to say you are dying a patient. That depends on everything that was discussed here. But a dying patient doesn't mean necessarily that he is going to die tomorrow and nothing can do anything more. So hope is important. Now remember, even physiologically, there are studies, and I'm sure the experts here can give a better assessment on it, but there are studies that show that if you keep